support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years with 7 cafes and drive-thru locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. In September of 2020, award-winning author and journalist Farai Chidea launched a one-hour show for NPR called Our Body Politic. It's unapologetically centered on how women of color experience the major political events of today, and more importantly, how they are impacting those very issues. KTOO began carrying Our Body Politic last month, starting October 6th, and it airs at 8 p.m. on 104.3, right after the 7 p.m. repeat broadcast of this show. Recently, I got a chance to talk to Farai about her show and her story. Farai Chidea, there's so much to say about you, but would you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Farai Chidea. I'm the host of Our Body Politic, which is a show by and about women of color and how we navigate the political space for the good of all. You know, I really feel like what we try to do is point out the leadership of Black women, Latinas, Asian Americans, Pacific Islanders, Indigenous people, you know, Indigenous women. Like, you know, we interviewed our second or third week, we interviewed Representative Deb Haaland, who's now, of course, Secretary of the Interior. And we just were like, you know what, we want to put some shine on how different types of women of color, conservative, liberal, and neither, are navigating power in a divided America.
You're known as an author, as you mentioned, a TV pundit, you're a policy analyst, you're an award-winning journalist, now you're a host, producer of an NPR talk show and podcast. But where would you say you got your start?
I got my start, first of all, in my house. You know, both of my parents had worked as journalists before I was born. And, you know, unfortunately, race and gender definitely played a role in, you know, my mother not being able to stay in that career. She'd gone to grad school and been an intern at the Washington Post and things like that. So there was a bittersweetness to it, but she always loved the news and repped for the news. And it was mandatory listening and reading. Like, part of our job as soon as we were old enough was to read the newspaper every day and watch the network TV news every night. And that was just part of what was considered, you know, good for us as learners, good for us as citizens, good for us as family. My family are ace political debaters at the dinner table. And, you know, it really allowed me to, you know, understand that this was something that you could talk about. And we disagreed, but we didn't disagree in that toxic, I hate you way. Do you know what I mean? Like, my family has a mix of like Black Republicans, Black independents, white people who've married into the family, mixed race people, liberals, you know, probably one socialist, you know, but I'd have to ask. You know what I mean? It's like, what can I say? We have a lot of fun with each other. And so that was my first training ground. And then I became a reporter right after college, working for Newsweek magazine. I mean, not a reporter, a fact checker, and then a reporter. But I was still in my early 20s when I was a Washington reporter.
Wow. Well, let's talk a little bit about the show, Our Body Politic. We just started carrying it here on KTOO. As we mentioned,
thank you, KTOO.
You're welcome, and thank you. And as we talked about earlier, the show is just about a year old, and it's called Our Body Politic. What inspired that name?
You know, there's the phrase, the body politic, which is about, you know, the sort of intellectual and social corpus of voters and citizens, and, you know, and I thought that what was missing was our body politic for women of color, that our bodies often were not represented in the halls of power in the same way as people from other demographics. And so let's bring our full selves into that space, you know? So I feel like it was just something where it was a nice little turn of phrase that, you know, has a couple of different meanings.
I like it. It's very apt. So how does Our Body Politics stand out from other NPR programs?
You know, I think that we manage to cover really heavy things without it being despairing. Like, one thing a lot of people like about the show is that we'll cover heavy things and then we'll laugh, or we'll cover heavy things and tell some personal stories about, you know, who we are and what our origin story is. And, you know, and so it's just really, it's really nice. And we have people on who are good at pattern recognition, who can tell you, like, not just is this what's happening today, this is what's probably going to happen tomorrow. And, you know, I think that women of color are really good at pattern recognition because often we have to survive. You know, like, I'm not going to lie, you know, being a woman of color, I'm 52 now. My mother turns 80 on Christmas Day, God willing. And I was lucky to grow up in an intergenerational family, not all in the same household, but we're like on Sundays, we'd go to mass and, you know, I'd see my great grandmother and there'd be great great aunts sometimes, and certainly great aunts and uncles. And in the history of being a Black woman in America, and very often other types of women of color in America, is having to predict the near future to save your own life, job, or family. And that is just something that we tap into, you know, is when you really need to understand complex systems, and America is one complex system, in order to survive, you do it. And that's part of the mix of lived experience and professional experience. So we have contributors who are economists, technologists, doctors, et cetera, but they all bring their lived experience to the table.
You do a regular segment, a roundtable with your guests called Sipping the Political Tea. What made you create that sort of show within the show?
Oh, you know, it is just, first of all, I was getting sick of just hearing interviews, you know, hearing my own voice, but so many times, and I'm still in the roundtables, most of them, but not all of them. But it's one of these things where it was like, let's just chop it up. You know, there's Washington Week and all these other stately shows that are wonderful in their own ways. But you can't crack certain types of jokes, you know, and have your girlfriend moments in that setting. And we wanted to be having the same levels of conversation, but with a little bit more fun and a little bit more wisecracking. And it's not just fun. It's like, you know, one week we did a wellness check, you know, like, we're doing the news and then we're like, things are depressing, how are you? It's like, well, you know, my pickup truck broke and my dog died and whatever, you know, it's like, we were all in it, you know? And we just talked about that because I think that the news can either be a wonderful connection to the world or it can be a public health disaster because it's affecting your mental health. And so you have to have some understanding that it's okay to be processing your emotions while you're processing information.
How would you describe your interviewing style?
You know, I think it's evolving. Sometimes I'm very, you know, like even now, sometimes I sort of stop and take long pauses and I'm really thinking through what's the question. Other times I kind of go off on a soliloquy and I'm talking my way through to what the right question is. Sometimes, like in a recent interview with Professor Anita Hill, I will have a guest who has a book or something and I will quote back passages of the book and get them to reflect on what they meant by something. And so it's like a little bit of a textual analysis. You know, so all of it is really about, I think each interview requires a different approach to really get the most out of it. Some of my interviews have been deeply personal. Others are just really straightforward, informational, and some are a mix.
I definitely want to talk more about your interview with Professor Anita Hill.
Yeah.
I should have grabbed one of your books and read you a passage.
Oh, no, that's so sweet.
I wish I had done that. I think that it's interesting that you describe your style as evolving. It's a good reminder that even, I think, like a top-notch professional like you, who has so much experience and always sounds so unruffled on the air, still considers herself to be growing and learning and improving. So that's kind of on a personal note, inspiring.
You got to keep growing, and it requires a certain amount of reflection, but also a certain amount of just letting go of perfectionism. All of us, I mean, most people I know who are radio hosts are super critical of their own voices. And sometimes we have to be a little kinder to ourselves as we listen to ourselves, because other people like the sound of our voice probably more than we do. And so part of it is just about remembering to have fun with what we're doing, too.
I really love your delivery style, but I do have to say it's very serious. And I just wonder, is that just who you are? Is that a part of your persona, or is that game face?
You know, it's both. I think as the show evolves, I think we will get looser. You know, it's sort of like when people play an instrument, they often start out playing in formulaic ways to learn it, and then they improvise. And for me, I'm still actually learning. I've been a radio host, obviously, for years, but I'm still learning, what does it mean to have a news show, news analysis, news commentary show that covers these heavy topics, and what is my voice? And I'm definitely not serious all the time, but I won't lie. I've been in a period, particularly, since the beginning of the pandemic, where I've been really deeply analytical about where we're going as a society and what the pressure points are. My sister happens to work in public health, so I got a lot of information about the pandemic early on, and that was one reason I wanted to start the show. So I think that once, I think I will get a lot looser. It's just, it's still improvisation. It's still a learning curve for me. This show is still a learning curve.
How much of the show is your own? And do you have a big role in shaping the episodes, selecting topics, selecting guests?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I have a big role, but it's a big role within a collaborative system. So we have a team. I would say that there's probably, depending on who's on what week, 5 to 6 people who have an editorial hand in each episode. This is not full-time staff. It's basically all of us. I mean, I had a separate full-time job until recently, because I wanted to see if we could fund the show. And I also have been raising the money for the show. I've raised just over $1 million so far, for the show. So that was my third job. My first job was my job. My second job was the show. Third job was fundraising for the show. And all, everything worked out. I gave 6 months notice to my full-time job. And so now I think, our processes will change, but it's basically been like 6 part-time people. Sometimes one or even 2 people won't work on the show in a week, but we try to cycle through brainstorming story ideas, but I come up with a lot. Sometimes I do my own prep, other times, most times, a producer does the prep. So, yeah.
Well, let's talk about politics. Mm-hmm. I have some questions for you about how you navigate certain aspects of that. So you're an experienced award-winning journalist, as we've already said, and politics is one of, if not the area of expertise. And you've covered the last 6 presidential elections. What draws you to that beat, I guess?
Yeah, so I think it's, again, my family engagement. And it's also that, to be honest, this show isn't one of the things that's been a mixed bag for me about doing this show is that we've spent so much time with politicians. My love of in political reporting is doing interviews with local people. That's my favorite thing, is to show up someplace and talk to people and find out what they're thinking and why they're thinking it. And talking to politicians was really not the goal of what I wanted to do, but we still want politicians, but actually sometimes I feel like our best interviews are the non-politician interviews, you know, because politicians, for obvious and understandable reasons, often can be very scripted. And, you know, we try to get them outside of their box, but sometimes that succeeds and sometimes that doesn't. A lot of times it's, you know, it's the more offbeat or quirky interview that carries the day.
Got it. How do you approach impartiality in journalism? As a host, I know I struggle with this. Is it important for you to remain neutral or to appear impartial when you're presenting on a topic or interviewing someone about something that's polarizing?
I do not go for objectivity as my standard. I don't even always go for impartiality as my standard. I go for fairness. And so what I mean by that is, and we've done several episodes on extremism, you know, both I covered the peaceful phase of the Stop the Steal rally on January 6th. I knew that there might be violence. I actually thought about staying, but then I thought, you know, I've got a full-time job. And I, in fact, predicted that a January 6th style event was going to happen before the election results were announced. I was like, Biden's going to win and there'll be political violence. And so that's not because I'm psychic. It's because I pay attention and I read white nationalist and supremacist websites and communications, as well as ones from many other backgrounds. And so one of the things that, you know, I think about a lot is how can we bring more civic intelligence to how we cover the country? So we have had on people like Major General Linda Singh, who helped do the January 6th investigation, but also an award-winning reporter who, you know, from 100 Days in Appalachia, who is a white man who can effectively go undercover at certain rallies. And we talked about the difference between me covering a rally where I'm sticking out like a sore thumb and him being like, you know, as he put it, the question mark. You know, and like, is he one of us? Is he not one of us? These are super complex and interesting topics that I'm grateful that we get the chance to explore. And I don't want the way that we cover America to be cookie cutter. And I also don't want it, you know, this is a show about women of color, but we have white guests as well, because obviously it's a country where we're all in this together, whether we like it or not. Sometimes we don't.
Do you think it's important to present, quote unquote, both sides of topics that are not actually political, based in science and fact, but have become politicized?
Yeah, I mean, sort of getting to your thing. So when my whole point, which I probably didn't make precisely, about impartiality is I'm not impartial to, you know, violent white supremacists who organize to try to overthrow the government. I'm not impartial. Like, I'm pro having a functioning democracy, and that does not fit, and I'm not going to pretend. But where my fairness comes in is that I'm not just going to stereotype. Like, I've spent 25 years interviewing active white supremacists and nationalists, and I mean self-identified, from the Klan to the now defunct Aryan Nation to you know, folks who went to Charlottesville who were millennials. And I do not try to depict them in ways that are not accurate. Like, I'm not impartial about the choices that they've made, but I will treat them fairly because they're my fellow Americans and I want to hear what they have to say. So I think that like on this show, I don't have to worry as much about seeming impartial. Like, I'm not impartial about voting rights. Like, I'm pro voting rights and I'm pro people of every race and gender having voting rights. And yet I'm not going to just, you know, wax on about that. I'm going to say, this is why certain groups wait in line longer. This is why certain groups rights are being constricted and challenged in these ways. Like, we get super analytical, and one of our contributors is, Professor Tiffany Jeffers of Georgetown Law School. She's not impartial, I would say, about voting rights, but she's analytical and she's fact-based and she's historically grounded. And that's something I think we need. Sometimes we need to just call it like it is. And there's never two sides. There's always multiple sides. And that's something I think that we try to get at too.
Who are some guests or what are some interviews that changed you in some way since you began doing Our Body Politic?
I think talking to then representative, now Secretary Deb Haaland was really amazing. She talked about being a 35th generation New Mexican, which lets you know just what a tiny little speck in the universe's eye America is. Like, the history of America is, you know, a fraction of so many different peoples who were here before this was a country. And we are all, you know, on a national learning journey, I think, around Indigenous Americans. And there's a lot of pushback to some people not respecting Indigenous culture. You know, there was the Rick Santorum comment, you know, that there's essentially no Indigenous culture, which is BS, because part of U.S. governance was actually based on Indigenous culture. So, you know, everyone can look all that up. But, you know, I think Leysia Clarendon of the WNBA, who is a non-binary and trans WNBA player, who had top surgery, is married, is a Christian, has a wife, has a baby, and who's living their dream of being a fully realized human being with intersectional identities. But the interview was also about how the WNBA owned at the time, the team at the time that she was on in Atlanta was partially owned by Senator Kelly Loeffler, and how they got involved in the Warnock v. Loeffler race, and how, you know, like, there's that line, just shut up and dribble. And, like, you know, Leysia was like, nope, we are not just shutting up and dribbling. We do what we want to do, which includes engaging in politics. And there are a lot of different types of people we have on that engage in politics in ways that are, you know, not through being an elected office holder. And I love those. And I love the, you know, just so many great medical guests, you know, and authors like Tressie McMillan Cottom and Roxane Gay and Nadia Hashimi, who's an Afghan American novelist who I highly recommend.
Excellent. I have to go back and listen to some of those. I didn't hear all those interviews. But I did hear the one where you recently interviewed Professor Anita Hill. What was that experience like for you?
You know, it was really great. It was really helpful to read just the first part. Like, in the very first part of the book, she talks about how she has a life partner, Chuck, who they've been together for, I think, 20 or 30 years now, maybe 20 years. And she almost never talked about her personal life. And this is all in the book, so it's not like a personal thing that I'm revealing, but Chuck was quite ill with cancer. And at one point she thought he might die. And she was like, oh, you know, I think I'm just going to put the book on hold so we can spend time together. And he was like, no, baby, no, like, finish your book. And I was like, I will vote for Chuck for president, you know, like, good for Chuck. He was like, baby, you know, just keep doing what you're doing. And it turns out that they found a treatment. So Chuck is still doing well, but just, you know, I feel like Professor Hill has had to be so guarded and has been the kind of person who routinely gets death threats and other horrible things. And to know that she has a loving, supportive partner and that she was able to do this book from a place of real connection to her childhood as one of 12 from a farming family in Oklahoma. And just, you know, I felt like the book is deeply analytical, but you also get to know a bit about her. And she was relaxed and comfortable, and we had just a really great time.
coming to the end of my questions, I just have one more for you as a wrap-up. We started airing our body politic here on KTOO, Juno's NPR station, just a few weeks ago. So what would you say to someone who is hearing your show or maybe hearing about you yourself for the very first time?
Welcome. Thank you. We respect you. We would love to hear what you have to say. I'm on Twitter, and we have an Our Body Politic Twitter, and you can reach out to us. We also are going to be revamping some new engagement so that you can interact with the show, give us suggestions for who you want to hear. We want to be here for you. And feel free to suggest not just, you know, your local politician, but local unsung heroes that we should know about.